5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
Think we could listen to the radio or something?
Radio? Who needs a radio?
Featuring the biggest names and newsmakers from the world of sports media.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Now, here's your host, the president of Barrett Sports Media, Jason Barrett.
Off we go on another rendition of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. I am your host, Jason Barrett. This is the fourth episode of Season 2, and I appreciate you listening and supporting what we do. A reminder to subscribe and leave a review for us on iTunes. It makes others aware of the program, and just as important, a retweet on Twitter or a share on Facebook makes a big difference. So thanks, guys, in advance for the help. On today's episode, I'm pleased to feature John Kincaid of 680 The Fan in Atlanta, the CBS Sports Radio Network, and Podcast One. John's a seasoned pro with a ton of opinion and insight on the industry. He's someone I've known for almost 15 years. We initially crossed paths in Bristol on the old Game Night program, and he's a guy who's had a lot of success as an air talent, and I respect him a great deal. So be listening for that conversation a little later on in the episode. To everyone who's reached out in the past week to express interest in writing for sportsradiopd.com, I sincerely appreciate it. I'm adding a few freelance writers for the website. The top priority right now is to find folks to help with updating news stories and creating original pieces. I've put a ton of time into my writing, and I enjoy managing the website, but my main responsibility is to listen, analyze, and advise my radio clients, and that sometimes makes it harder to create or update web content and promote it on social media. If you're in the sports media business or interested in breaking into it and you're looking to build your name, develop stronger industry relationships, and make a few extra dollars in the process, visit the job section on the website for details. One thing I will ask, please include a few samples of your written work. All right, now that we've got that all out of the way, that brings us to this week's 5 and 5, and there were a few stories that piqued my interest, so without further delay, let's get to it.
There are 5 minutes remaining.
Pump the brakes on Charissa Thompson heading to ESPN after being rumored to be the frontrunner to join Mike Greenberg on his forthcoming morning show. Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated reports that Thompson is staying put at Fox Sports. This could actually turn out to be a blessing in disguise for ESPN because creating a splash in the heavily competitive time of morning drive is going to take more than a smart, informed professional pair. I think Charissa is a great lead host, and joining Greeny might have made for a highly respected combination, but I'm not sure that's enough to create a spark and break up an audience's morning routine. Does this open the door now for Katie Nolan to get a stronger look? Does the company stay in-house with someone like Sage Steele or Michelle Beadle? Or does another outsider like Jenna Wolf become more appealing? There are many directions the network can go. One of them, though, won't be to Charissa Thompson's front door. Sticking with ESPN, credit to network executives who gave the green light to launch 24 hours of ESPN 8 The Ocho. Maybe it shouldn't have taken 13 years to happen, but better late than never. And I thought ESPN absolutely nailed it. ESPNU was turned into The Ocho last Tuesday, August 8th, and programming for the day included dodgeball, arm wrestling, darts, cornhole, and other niche sporting events. The social buzz was high, as was the curiosity in seeing what would be on the air. Had the channel operated like normal that day, it wouldn't have generated as much interest. Now, that doesn't mean this would work 365 days a year, but what it shows you is that taking chances pays off. Whether it's doing something for a day, a week, or even one segment, when you surprise people and treat them to something unique, they reward you for it. John Landgraf is the network boss of FX, and like many TV operators, he's faced with an onslaught of competition for eyeballs and dollars. At the Television Critics Association tour last week, he was asked about competing against Silicon Valley brands like Apple, who are spending money hand over fist to create content. Landgraf said, "I respect Apple as a company, but we can't do what they do. I don't think I'd be good spending $10 billion on content because I'm not interested in making the world's largest all-you-can-eat buffet. What interests me is a more tightly curated quality control. I have to hope that if we do what we do well enough and get it to consumers at the price and manner they expect, then that will still be meaningful against the absolute tsunami of volume that's going to be coming out of all this capital flowing into content creation. Now think about that for a second if you're in radio. Ad dollars are tight, an endless sea of audio options are available, and audiences only have so much time in the day to listen. You can't control what others do, but you absolutely can win by featuring superb talent and creating consistently great content experiences. NBA video game fans, Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman are about to invade your gaming experience. The First Take duo will be included in EA Sports' NBA Live 18 in the game's career mode. If you're a gamer who isn't a fan of the Embrace Debate presentation, you're likely going to skip past this or get annoyed by it. If you don't mind a little extra entertainment value and realism while playing, this might add to it. The real winner in this, though, is ESPN. Younger fans who play sports games may not watch shows like First Take, but now they'll be exposed to it. That's great for ESPN in gaining early entry into the minds of tomorrow's sports audience. But whether the youth of America should be subjected to debate-style programming, well, that all depends on who you ask. 95.7 The Game parted ways this week with program director Don Collins, which of course led to my phone blowing up since I previously programmed the station and built it back in 2011. Anytime you oversee a brand and sink your heart and soul into it, it's going to remain a part of you. When the station launched in August 2011, it was in 24th place with Men 2554. When I left in 2015, our final three books were 4th, 3rd, and 4th. Two of our shows in that year won head-to-head battles against KNBR, including John Lund and Greg Papa, who consistently won their day part for nearly 2 years. Now, I'm not privy to why the station felt a PD change was needed, but the ratings weren't to the level that many expected, especially after the company stepped up to acquire the Golden State Warriors rights. I'll say this, I love that radio station and the people in it. As much as I try to put it in my rearview mirror, the second anything happens in the Bay Area, I'm asked for my opinion on it. That's the result of earning trust and a good reputation and helping people enjoy success. I might have done some things different the past 2 years if I were there, but I also made mistakes during my 4-year run. At this point, the game can still turn the tide. I hope they find a leader who can lift them higher, and I wish Don Collins well as he prepares for the next chapter of his broadcasting career. That was the 5 and 5. Let me know your thoughts on any of the topics I brought up. You can reach me on Twitter at SportsRadioPD or by email at jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. That brings us to the interview portion of our episode, and this week's conversation takes place with 680 The Fan and CBS Sports Radio host John Kincaid. John has produced a strong track record of success during his sports radio career, working alongside the same partner, Buck Ballou, for the past 17 years. He's established himself on both the local and national circuit, and I was able to catch up with him to dive into his career and pick his brain on a number of different industry subjects, and I think you'll gain some insight from what John has to say. 3, 2, 1. You're a big Philadelphia sports fan, but you've since become an established Atlanta sports media personality. So let's go back to the beginning. When did you first even catch the sports radio bug?
So when I'm a kid, I'm in the late 70s, early 80s, there is sports radio, but there are only sports radio shows.
Right.
So Howard Eskin is doing a nightly call-in show. And then before I would go to bed, I would listen to a guy named Steve Fredericks, who used to do a show with Mike Missanelli back in the day in Philadelphia. But Steve Fredericks would do a nighttime sports talk show. And I would listen to him and a guy named Don Henderson and some others that did sports call-in in Philadelphia, and I listened to it every single day, and every single night on the way to bed I'd be listening to it. Look, those guys were established and they were legends in my town, so I never thought, okay, am I going to take one of their jobs? Because there were so few of them, there were so less opportunities. And then right as I get out of college, then WFAN launches, and within a year WIP launches. And so at that point, I'm working for the Philadelphia Flyers, doing video and statistics for the Philadelphia Flyers coaching staff, legendary coach Mike Keenan. And so I got the opportunity then to see WIP, which is the flagship of the Flyers. and got to see this transition from being a music station and news station to being the second all sports station in America. And Jason, I'll tell you, it was right place, right time. Because all I had to do was go, hey, I'd like to intern there. Good. Come on in. You're an intern. It was a burgeoning industry, totally different, and it absolutely just hit at the exact time. If I was a surfer, it was the perfect wave.
So then this is the time where Tony Bruno, Angelo Cataldi, and Howard Eskin are all at IP, right?
Well, Tony Bruno was actually at CAU at the time.
Okay.
Before he joined Angelo and Al Morgani on the morning show, Angelo got brought on from the Philadelphia Inquirer and left being a writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And he was doing the morning show with Tom Brookshire, formerly of CBS Sports. And so Tom Brookshire was called Brookie and the Rookie for a while. And then Ange took over. When Tom stepped aside from radio, it became Angelo Cataldi, Angelo, Tony, and Al. And the morning team was launched. And an absolute legend of our industry in Angelo Cataldi began his career. And it has been a three-ring circus, a very profitable three-ring circus ever since. And thankfully, guys like Eskin, guys like Cataldi, I interned for all three of them. And I am so honored for each of them because, Jason, I swear to you, I have stolen a little bit from each of them. You know, someday in retirement, they're probably going to be hitting me up for a check because I found things I loved about Tony, things I loved about Howard, and things I loved about Angelo, and I have tried to incorporate pieces of all of them into how I go about my business every single day, whether it's locally, whether it's nationally, or whether it's on my podcast.
Well, you know the old line, imitation is the best form of flattery, and if you're not stealing from somebody, then you're not doing your work. I mean, we're all inspired by someone, right?
And are there three better guys, honestly, in the industry to steal from?
Right.
Than Cataldi and Eskin and Bruno, because they all approach their jobs in a different way. I love the fact that Tony Bruno could go from animated argument to a belly laugh in 0 to 60, and how Angelo Cataldi could run the three-ring circus and allow himself to be the butt of the joke, and how Howard Eskin never cared if his opinion was popular. He was just going to offer his opinion. I found all of them to be just great individuals. And think of the time. I'm interning at a sports radio station, and Jody Mack's in and out of the door, too. And Jody, still, I'm so proud to call him one of my peers at CBS Sports Radio now, one of the most gracious guys, getting to know him. It was really, truly an all-star cast, and it was fun to get to be a part of that, and it helped to launch my passion and love of this career.
I got to tell you, I had a brief cup of coffee in Philadelphia, spent 6 months there, worked with Jody, got a chance to, I wouldn't call it compete because 950 at the time, which was launching, was early in its infancy and WIP was running the roost, but really gained a lot of respect for Angelo and Howard and how they approach their show. And there's a reason why they're legends in the business. I'm curious, as someone who had the benefit of contributing on Angelo's morning show, you've seen it and why it succeeds. What's a day in the Angelo Cataldi show like from pre-show to showtime to post-show?
Here's what nobody realizes about Angelo is that as unscripted as he can sound, he's incredibly scripted. He has a plan. He has his, you know, legal pad in front of him where he has been scribbling notes for the previous 24 hours. He knows exactly where he wants the madness to go and how he's going to get you there. But anybody listening to that show would never be able to tell you that. He's a master at one day being the guy that's making you laugh on the way to work. But the next day, he may decide to be the guy who's going to stir the pot and piss you off. You never know what to expect. But one of the things that Angelo Cataldi, and why I love him so much, personally and professionally, is the fact that that man, he found a guy like me. I started on his show doing comedy bits, dressing up as a room service guy at a Philadelphia hotel and delivering Joe West 3 bags of carrots after he had blown a game for the Phillies the night before with a bad call. Being part of a campaign called Honk for Herschel, where we were trying to get Herschel Walker by trying to get listeners to come and honk their horns and drive circles around Veterans Stadium so the Eagles bosses would hear them, and they end up signing the guy.
That's fantastic.
Doing my Karnak routine, which I always did on his show, John Ack the Magnificent, where I would do a little Karnak routine, and he would put it every single Friday. We'll do this at like 8:15 on every single Friday. Jonak comes on. He's so gracious with his stage. Never once has Angelo Cataldi said, I'm afraid of raising this guy's prestige because it may hurt mine. He's a star maker. He's a guy who brings people up. And I have always tried to be that way on my shows, copying him, is that if you find a young, talented guy, bring him on. If it's a board op, if it's a producer, if it's another guy on your station, bring him along and share your stage. Because you know what? If it makes my show better, I benefit, as does the person you're sharing your stage with.
That's great. When a veteran personality with a lot of success is willing to do that, it speaks volumes for young guys. Obviously, it paid off for you.
No
because
question.
I mean, you go from Philadelphia ultimately to Atlanta, and that starts because of outside of radio work. But then by being sure. there, it leads to getting inside the building with the fan and then ultimately with 790. So take me through the maiden voyage in Atlanta radio and how it got started.
I was moving to Atlanta. I found out with business I was moving to Atlanta. I used to be a corporate guy, you know, suit and tie. Had a very successful business career going on. And Mike Thompson, one of the legendary programmers of sports radio from The Ticket in Dallas to launching The Fan in Atlanta and ESPN Radio in L.A. and nationally. Mike Thompson was launching the original Fan. And Tony Bruno was kind enough to reach out to Mike Thompson for me and to say, hey, this guy is coming down to Atlanta. Why don't you give him a shot on the weekends? Give him a shot to do something. Sent him some cassette tapes back in the day. And on Tony Bruno's recommendation, Mike Thompson and I met. He gave me a shot doing Saturday morning radio. That then became Saturday morning and Sundays. And I started working on the original fan in Atlanta, then moved to 790 The Zone with Steak Shapiro and that whole gang over there. And then when 680 was launching again, I was ready to work full time after doing a year of television and radio with the Atlanta Thrashers, when Scotty Farrell was the voice of the Thrashers,
right,
doing radio and TV with them, and part-time sports radio on 790. I had left the business world, took a pay cut after having cancer twice. So I was looking for a career change. I wanted something that was going to be more fun, and I wanted to chase my passion after almost dying. And Mike Thompson, again, was coming back to Atlanta to launch The Fan, and he said, I want to hire you. And I was so excited, and that happened in the fall of 2000, and there it was. 680 The Fan launched, and we get ready to celebrate 17 years coming up on Labor Day weekend. And I can hardly imagine it, Jason, looking back. It's been an amazing, amazing run.
What's incredible about that is you've spent 17 years with The Fan, and you've been working alongside the same partner, former Georgia quarterback Buck Belue. Now, on a local level, 17 years is insane.
Well, it is insane, and I think maybe sometimes Buck's insane. I think sometimes I'm insane, and I think management is insane too, is what I will tell you. Is that what I would say is this, it's funny, is as we tape today, we have 3,981 in the books, and we count every show that we work together, because Mike Thompson called us in probably like 3 months into the show, and he says, I want to tell you both, I'm going to fire your asses. If you don't start acting like professionals, if you don't start working together and listening to each other and collaborating and tolerating each other, and being more considerate of each other on the air, I will fire both your asses and you will not work 100 shows. So we get our asses chewed out right before a show, like within like 30 minutes of a show. We come walking out and he goes, you better get to work. You better put this thing together and you better do what I hired you to do. So we start the show that day and I happen to check my calendar and I go back and I start the show that day with, it's the 43rd edition of Buck and Kincaid today. No, just trying to cut the tension.
Right.
Thompson kicks the door open and goes, cut it out, like under his breath. And I'm like, okay, I'm poking the bear today. By the end of the show that night, he's in the studio and he's laughing and he's telling the audience what happened before the show. And I'm telling you, it's the seminal moment for our show and for our partnership. We could have gone off the rails and crashed and burned during our first football season back in 2000, but we didn't. And you know why? Because it taught me the lesson early on, Jason, is that the people who listen to your show who are consumers of your product that are producers, board ops, the program director, you got to trust their input and you got to be willing to listen to it. Because I do my shows, I don't listen to them.
Right.
And they listen. And once you get somebody whose ear you trust, and I will tell the audience, from us getting to work together for just a short time at the network level, you've been somebody that I have checked back in with very frequently during my career.
Mm-hmm.
When I've had something I wanted to bounce off you, a question I wanted to ask you about, maybe a career move I was thinking of making, you're one of those people. When I found ears that I trust, I take their advice. And even if I don't want to hear what they're saying, I learned that. And I thank God for Mike Thompson for that every day.
Obviously, having a PD in your corner and someone you respect and trust, that helps. But also, at the end of the day, even though the PD may hear certain things and offer it to you guys, the real key to making any show work is ultimately you and Buck. If you guys are not on the same page and you guys aren't tied at the hip and willing to put the work in, it's not going to work. How do you make a relationship like that work? 4,000 shows, 17 years. There's got to be a lot of ups and downs. I'm sure there's probably been plenty of times that you guys both thought about quitting. So how do you make it work?
I'm just so damn talented. No, I'm just teasing. Let's put it this way, is that both of us have been extremely tolerant of the other. And there are times where both of us have been driven crazy by the other. There are times where both of us have been pissed off at the other. There have been times where one of us maybe felt slighted over something, or where one of us felt that the show was being too much of him, or the direction was going in a way we didn't want it to go. There were times where we fought over the wheel and the control of where the show was going. What is better today than it's ever been is our collaborative process. And again, that's come with a lot of bloody noses, a lot of busted up lips, some hurt feelings from time to time, some raised voices from time to time. Buck's an athlete. Mm-hmm. And Buck's a world, you know, a college football national championship quarterback. Buck's a winner. He was a winner. He was a competitor. He was fiery. But we both, neither one of us had all the answers, but we each had some of the answers. And I can tell you this, in our collaborative process, there's been something that Buck Ballou from day one that has been part of our success in Atlanta that I fought. And it was Buck every single day wanted to do college football. And we called ourselves the College Football Voice of the South. And I thought, okay, that's great. That's a great slogan. I love it. I love that we do more college football than anybody else. But Buck believed we could do college football 365 days a year. And I completely disagreed with him. And I completely fought him on it. For many, many years. And you know what? 17 years into the show, by the time we were like 12 years into the show, 11 years into the show, we were doing some college football every single day, 365 days a year. And that was Buck's vision, Buck's passion, Buck's belief, and it took me a long time to buy into it. And when I did, the show was better. I always believe that some days it's the Buck show. When there's a big Georgia football, SEC football weekend, when there's a big college football story, when there's something that involves viscerally a player, what was going on in that player's mind? What was going on in the field at that moment? Look, you know, it's up to me to make sure it's more the Buck show. What's mm-hmm. Buck's reaction to that?
Right.
What is Buck's expertise? When there's a big controversy in town, when there's something that's controversial and people are going to be charged up and there's going to be arguing and everything, it's more the Kincaid show. And Buck knows, okay, that's more of John's gig. John takes a little more center stage today. The more of the collaborative process that we grew to understand and be able to work together, it's helped. And also, too, we work three times as hard in preparation today than we did in 2000, 2005. We work so much more today at making sure that every single tease is scripted out before the show. Every single in-segment look ahead is teased before the show. We've gone to a new thing now where in rejoins, we have Buck recorded teasing ahead the content that's coming to set appointments with people.
Mm-hmm.
We're constantly reinventing. And the majority of ideas that we get on reinvention on Buck and Kincaid do not come from Buck and do not come from Kincaid. They come from people who we have learned to trust, who give us some good ideas, and then we try them. That's how you manage to stick around for as long as we have.
You know, the thing that you were talking about there with who gets the limelight on each day, I've always had this old analogy I've used with many talent who've worked in team shows is, I need Steve Nash, not Allen Iverson. You know, Steve Nash can get 30 points a game, but he's always thinking about getting others involved during his career. And he won an MVP award doing that. But you had guys like Iverson, and, you know, I'm touching on a Philadelphia guy here, who was awesome.
Sure.
And you know, he needed to take 40 shots a game because the cast around him wasn't as strong. But sometimes you got to give the other guys those touches and let them have the moment, because that's ultimately how you get the best out of a talk show.
Well, plus what brought us success is the fact that our skill sets are completely different. Buck has much more of the tangible expertise, the credibility of being able to speak as to what's going on in the field, what's in an athlete's mind. Buck was drafted twice in Major League Baseball, drafted in the first round out of high school, drafted in the second round out of college. So he's got a lot of credibility there. I'm very good at just the nature of radio. I had much more experience of radio when our partnership came together. I had worked so much more in it. I had produced. I had interned. I had done all the things of observing some of the greats in the industry. And so there were different skills we were each bringing to the table. What we had to find out, though, was share the stage. And I in our partnership, was the one who was far more likely to try to steal the spotlight. He was not. Buck's very willing to be part of a team. He understands being part of the team. I was, you know, constantly trying to say, hey, well, you got to do things to get the show noticed, got to do things to get noticed here. So there'd be a struggle, but many more times it was me trying to be the one to go, hey, look at us, look at me, look at what we're doing here. Our strengths together, when we are doing the yin and the yang thing, it really works. And the big thing is, too, is that, Jason, it's one of those things that I always tell people is that one of the things a show has to do to last 17 years, and I tell the college kids, I just spoke to a bunch of college kids back in the spring, is that your show better be profitable. And it's a different day and age than maybe years and years ago where it was just numbers, numbers, numbers. Your show better be making money, because when you're 17 years in, you're going to be a high-priced personality at your station. You're going to be a high-priced guy in your market. You better be able to justify your salary by your show being very marketable, where you appeal to advertisers. People are wanting to listen to your show. They're tuned in. They're connected to things that you're doing. We do different charity events during the year as a station and as a show. We have a golf tournament every year that's one of the most profitable charity golf tournaments in the Southeast. And we've been doing it for, you know, this year was our 15th or 16th that we've done it, if I'm not mistaken. And it's hugely popular. We ran out of golf course all day long, sell out two flights. And the tournament's usually sold out a month in advance where you can't get in it. And it's a total three-ring circus party that celebrates our radio station. And it celebrates the other shows, too, even though our name's on it. Because a lot of team not only relates to Buck and Kincaid, but relates to the whole station being successful. Because as you well know as a programmer, if you've got one really, really successful show and the other shows on the station suck, your show's going to suffer.
Yeah.
And building up all the pieces of the station, the stationality, as many people will call it, you know, promoting another show, promoting another talent, even if it's getting into it with another talent. We've got the veteran crew in Atlanta. We've got the ones that people have been listening to in Atlanta forever, our team at 680. And it's fun, like, byplay between Chuck and Chernoff on our station, and byplay between the Front Row and the Rude Awakening. We've got four shows that are so different. Every single one of the shows sounds completely different and has a totally different vibe to it. And guess what? We bust on each other. We pick on each other. We have fun with each other. We praise each other. We play audio from each other's shows. I think everybody gets and realizes if the tide lifts for the midday show and the tide lifts for the afternoon drive and morning shows, everybody's boat is going to be just a little bit higher, and those bonus checks are going to spend just a little bit easier.
You know, one thing that feels a lot different to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, tell me if it feels different to you, is I remember back in the day, the 680, the Fan, 790, the Zone rivalry was pretty damn good. I mean, there was a lot of passion on both sides
there. It was ferocious.
It was. I mean, you could feel the Steak Shapiro, Andrew Saltzman group going against the Dickies, and it was really good. Today, I'm sure there's some level of that competition between 680 and 92.9 the game, but from afar, it doesn't feel as intense. Is that accurate?
100% accurate. David Dickey, our boss, calls it the Coke and Pepsi days, which is between when 680 was going up against 790. And 790 the zone still, and I'll tell you, the 3 years I spent there, I'm so proud of it because that was one scrappy-ass radio station that just had one of the worst signals in town. And I think was capping out in its biggest days, billing $13, $15 million a year. And was an amazing success story of what they managed to do in that market and how they managed to launch some great personalities. Chris D'Amino and Steak Shapiro and Nick Cellini and Sandra Golden and Matt Chernoff and Chuck Oliver. That now David Dickey's put together sort of this team where they've sort of morphed together. And believe me, it wasn't easy in the beginning. It wasn't easy when Chris D'Amino became part of 680 The Fan. It wasn't easy when Steak came over to The Fan. Because over the years, there'd been some hurt feelings. There'd been some FU fights.
Yep.
There'd been some ill words. Steak and I had ended up on the front page, not the front page of the sports section, front page of the newspaper a few times, going back and forth over things. And now you're being asked, hey, by the way, we got some free agents out there and we're bringing in these guys. Believe me, it was a challenge. But one of the things that was great about all those guys is the one thing I said is, look, I don't know how I'm going to enjoy having them as teammates, but I know they're winners. I know their work ethic. A guy like D'Amino, he is a sports radio cyborg. He's his own brand. He's his own thing. And Chris does things that not a lot of guys do. He's almost a throwback to old school radio days. But nobody's going to outwork D'Amino. Nobody's going to try to outwork the phones, outwork the contacts, outwork being at a press conference and everything like that. Steak Shapiro, a marketing genius and a guy who just knows how to push buttons, knows how to get people talking. But it wasn't easy when we got told they were coming in. It was a transition period, but I'm damn proud to call them partners and to call them teammates because they just helped to bring a different listener to our station and a different listener to our brand.
When you talk about competition, you look at what's changed in Philly over the last 10 years. You've got, now there is a legitimate 1-2 punch with WIP and 97.5 The Fanatic. Obviously, you came up with WIP, but you know guys that are over at The Fanatic. From afar,
sure.
How would you assess what is working and what isn't working when you look at the Philadelphia market?
I listened to both of them, by the way. I know both stations' program directors, and I want to congratulate Matt Nahagian and that team for being up for a Marconi.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm telling you, I would talk to Matt about his vision, and I would say, I love what I hear from this guy. Is he going to be able to practically cut into the legendary WIP and manage to thrive? And he's done it. And I think what has worked is that over time, 97.5 has started to sound more like Philly. And I always thought that the station didn't sound Philly enough. And on my Twitter feed, almost every single day, somebody from Philly says, when are you coming home? And I'm like, you know, usually like twice a month I go on with WIP's morning show. And I guest on a lot of the shows up there and everything like that. But I got to tell you this, the Philadelphia sports fans being served really well, that there is competition and that there is a little bit of change. But it's a critical time for IP because as Eskin went away, I don't think that they've solved that problem. They haven't found the success in being able to find somebody to be able to fill those shoes. And when Angelo decides to walk away, what do you do then? And that's where 97.5 has a chance to really sort of, they've established themselves so closely. And Mike Missinelli does a fine job. And Mike Missinelli has his own following. And there are people who listen to Mike every day to be pissed off. And there are people who listen to Mike every day to be entertained. So I know this, Mike Missinelli, he knows the Philadelphia sports fan, period. He knows what they're talking about. He knows where they go. When they brought over Anthony Gargano, Cuz is one of the finest guys, nice guy. Cuz knows what the guys in South Philly at a bar are talking about in Philly sports. He knows how to relate to the listener. He can connect in a way. Once 97.5 started to sound more Philly, it started to become legitimate. And remember, listenerships change in age, and it's one of the things that we battle with Buck and Kincaid every single day in Atlanta. When you're around 17 years, what it means is a lot of your listeners have been listening to you for 10, 12, 15, 17 years. So what does that mean? Maybe some of those younger listeners don't know who the hell you are.
Right.
Or they didn't. What you have to do constantly is, and it's one of the things I try to do, is I try to pick the brains constantly of the young guys that I work with. We have a talented guy who does the updates on our show, produces in the afternoon, hosts on the weekends, Carlos Medina, Front Office Los. I'm constantly picking his brain. I pick the brain of my producer, who is 18 years younger than me. I want to know, how are you listening to the show right now? And I was fascinated that, you know, we had hundreds of listeners responding, got almost, like 800, 900 responses. And I found out that 27% of my listenership was listening on an app. If you had asked me that before the show began, I would have said, no way. Now, there are a quarter of the people are listening on an app. Yep. Just because I don't do it doesn't mean they don't. So that's why you got to constantly evolve. And if I'm WIP, that's what I'm trying to do. Am I evolving? Am I sounding like all I want to do is take calls? Am I sounding like just the same old formula? Look, Howard Eskin had a formula, and Howard could come in. He could stroll in from a practice or a press conference or something 10 minutes before the show begins, hit the red light on, entertain a little bit, and then take calls for 3 hours. Today's sports radio is different. It's a different animal. And if you're not changing, you are going to be exposed, and you're going to be out of this business. And that's why you got to stay one step ahead of the bear, baby. If you're doing the same show you were doing 2 or 3 years ago, you're in danger of becoming extinct.
So with all those thoughts on the Philadelphia market, how come John Kincaid has resisted overtures to go there?
I've had opportunities to go back. And I've got to tell you, this is a really hard question to answer. I don't think they want the radio show that I tend to do. I think they want a show that's going to have 30 phone callers an hour. I don't do that show. I think they want a show that is much more traditional Philly, where I'm trying to do something, especially like even when I do my national show, especially, I'm trying to do something where I'm appealing to 25-year-olds as well as 55-year-olds. And I'm trying to push the envelope to try different things and to sound a little odd and to do the odd interviews. And, one of the things I love on the national show is finding celebrities who like sports and talking to them. If there's a television show that I like and I find out one of the stars is a big sports fan, have them on from a popular TV show. I like to do odd things. And I really think that Philly sports radio is very formulaic. I think it's become very almost cookie cutter in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I don't fit into that mold. Plus, I think there are some program directors over the years who have been a little scared off. I can tell you there was one at WIP back in the day who was scared off by me and thought I was a young Eskin or a young Angelo since they had brought me up and was scared off of me from doing it. But the number one reason is because I've gotten to work for a guy like David Dickey for 17 years. And you work for a family. I don't work for a corporate entity. I work for a family. I can go in my boss's office any day before or after my show and usually be able to catch my boss. And I can speak to him man-to-man. And I can close the door and I can complain about something that I'm not happy about. I can ask for something that I want for the show or behind the scenes. And a lot of people in corporate radio don't have that. They don't have that where they can touch and feel that they're part of something. Plus, I feel like since I was on the air day one at 680 The Fan in the second launch of the station, I feel a real ownership with the product. And I'm so damn proud of that. That's the most important reason why the call has never been answered.
You mentioned, you brought up a few minutes ago about doing some of the national stuff, and that's another area that you've been fortunate to venture into because over the last almost 15 years, you've worked for ESPN Radio and now CBS Sports Radio. And having seen how they operate on both sides and done shows for both networks, what's been the difference for you in how you approach doing a national show now versus how you might have done it 6, 7 years ago for ESPN?
Boy, again, you talk about, right place, right time. Because of Mike Thompson and Pete Genesini, Mike Golic was doing the Peach Bowl color analyst work at Christmas time, and Mike Greenberg was off. And it was the beginnings of Mike and Mike, and actually the beginnings of Buck and Kincaid, because Buck and Kincaid started 6 months after Mike and Mike. And so Golic had to do the show in Atlanta, and Greenberg was off. So they said, would you fill in? So I filled in on the show with Mike Golic. And because of that, I got to fill in on ESPN. I got to be a monthly ESPN game night. I would fly up, and I met you up there.
Yep.
And I would fly up on a Friday, do Buck and Kincaid from Bristol, and then I would do Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, and then fly home Monday morning in time to do Buck and Kincaid the next day, that day. And so because of Mike Golic having to be there, I got my first exposure to where they then counted on me to do game night. And then Dan Patrick speaking up, and I got to do Dan Patrick's show a couple times. And then Dan Patrick's show led to me filling in for Colin Cowherd. But I can tell you it's a different animal. CBS, much more hands-off than ESPN. CBS, less restrictive in what you talk about. You're much less likely to get a memo about a topic that you espouse or talk about that might be a little edgy or anything than I would be at ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
But contrarily, on the other side, ESPN very much coached my backside up in a big way. Whether it was, Scott Masteller, Pete Ginnesini, Amanda Gifford, who has climbed through the ranks there, Louise Cornetta, and some of the other executives that I worked with that coached me up, that they took the time to say, hey, okay, you really know your local radio, but here's what you got to do on the national, and here's what we're looking for, and we need more of this. And after a few years of showing them that I could do that, then they gave me my own show with my own name on it and was able to still coach me up along the way. I love that because I'm one of those hosts who I love getting like other people's feedback on what should I be doing here? Did that suck? I tell every producer I've ever had, you better be able to tell me that that segment sucked. You better be able to tell me that that idea isn't good. Find your voice. I tell them all, find your voice because I need you, because I can tend to steamroll people. And if they don't feel comfortable to say to me, John, I didn't like that. The minute that they have the confidence to do that, then things blow up. Steve Coughlin, Stanford Steve from
yep.
Scott Van Pelt. One of my producers produced my Sunday show, John Kincaid Show, when it was on ESPN Radio. I said, remember, I'm counting on you. If a segment sucks, you tell me it sucks. I'd be 3 minutes into a topic and he'd go in my ear. I'm bored. And he'd go, pipe down, old man. Like he took it to a new level.
Right.
Allie Bronson, who produces the trifecta, does a lot of stuff there. Allie, as far as a female producer in the business, Amanda Gifford, too, at the time when she was producing radio, they had no problem. Once given the invite to tell me that a segment sucked, they had no problem telling me it sucked. We'd go to commercial break and they'd be like, John, don't do that again. I know people called in, and I know it sounded like it was good. It really wasn't. They had no problem with that. And I'm telling you, I thank God for all of them, Jason, because I have been blessed to work with so many talented people, and you are amongst them, that just have helped me along the way. And I love to bring them on the air with me to say to me, boy, man, you sound grumpy today. You sound old today. You sound out of touch today. I can't believe you have that opinion, because here's why I think your opinion sucks, John. And like to get into it with me, because I learn so much every single day from them, and I thank God for it.
Interesting enough, you bring up the aspect of growing older. And one thing that
yes.
happens for a lot of us as we age is we become stronger interested in politics. Now, you've been pretty vocal
yes.
about a lot of your positions. As you know, I'm not
sure.
telling you anything you don't know. Some are going to love that about you. Some are not.
Right.
Why do you think it's important as a host to be open about those subjects and how you feel about them?
Well, the one thing I think is that especially if I was just to study the demographic of sports radio, and I'm constantly a student of what I hear. The highest, education level, the highest household incomes. We're talking about highly successful, highly educated people. And so what I always believe is you don't let a show or your personal Twitter feed or anything get dominated with stuff like that. But if you know your audience is truly on a daily basis talking like that, I know that my audience on a daily basis in Atlanta, a young, upwardly mobile community, I know that I've got doctors, lawyers, entrepreneurs listening to the show, as well as I've got young computer programmers and otherwise and people like that will listen to the show. It's okay to dip your toe in the pool it's okay to pass a comparative commentary or to say something that was going on that day. I think if you ignore the biggest things going on in the world and you don't mention them and you're doing a sports show, I think you're a fool. But I think what you want to do is make it be known that, hey, I don't think I got all the answers. I'm no expert, but I got to tell you how I feel about this. Because I truly believe there are different ways to make connections. A guy who absolutely hates my sports opinions, he knows I talk about my family on the air. I talk about being a dad of a little girl, of a young teenage girl now. I talk about that challenge. I talk about my wife and I talk about things that go on with that. I try to say, okay, this guy may think I'm a total jerk because I don't like his team or I criticized his team yesterday, but maybe he'll relate to me as a son, as a husband, as a father. Mm-hmm. I think there are so many ways that you can make connections with a listener, but all of them have to be done in perfect balance. So I have no problem with that. I tend to be a pretty conservative guy, but I tend to be a little more socially liberal. One of the things I know, too, is that my advertisers know who I am, and I think my listeners know who I am. And I said I can either bluff them or I can just be me. And I just decide to be me.
Yeah, you're being genuine and relatable. And if they don't like something about you, they'll find something else to like. Right.
But you got to be delicate with it. You can't beat people over the head. I mean, I see some national sports guys that honestly, to me, are so far on the political spectrum that they're not discussing their preaching. They're not discussing anything. They're not throwing something out there to get into a discord or a conversation. It's just like they're preaching. They're pushing their point of view, and it's over and over again. I've gotten into it with a national reporter from CBS, and I've gotten into it with him on Twitter, and I've gotten into it with another popular national college basketball guy regarding their politics, just constantly beating people over the head with it. And I'm like, dude, are you open for discussion on this, or are you just preaching to me? And I have no problem engaging with that. I love Twitter, and I have fun with it. And thankfully, again, the young guys who worked around my show got me to do Twitter, and I started doing it early. So I was ahead of the guys in my radio market. They track in Atlanta who is the top Twitter follows. Who do people in Atlanta interact with? You get points for every time someone reads your tweet, retweets your tweet, or responds to your tweet. And you get points. And every month they put out the top 100 Atlanta Twitter followers. I'm the only sports radio host that's in the top 100 every single month. Chuck Oliver sometimes shows up there, the king of college football. And I'm usually in the top 15. I average being in the top 15 in my market. I'm ahead of any of the local sports TV people. I'm ahead of the local columnists because I'm going to interact with the listeners and we're going to interact on a variety of things. And I think it's an incredibly valuable tool. And guess what? Don't be afraid to sometimes get a little bloody lip on Twitter, be made fun of, be a fool, you know, get into something, let people make fun of you. Don't be thin-skinned. If you're thin-skinned, don't be on Twitter.
As fun as Twitter is, though, you've got something going on that's even more fun. You get to hang out with Shaquille O'Neal all the time, doing the big podcast for Podcast One. I'm curious, how did that situation even materialize? Because, first of all, for anyone who hasn't listened to it, I highly recommend it. It's excellent. It's very funny. How did that come about? Because you guys have hit it off, and you're over 100 episodes now, right?
Yeah. We taped a couple this week for the next two Mondays. So, because we're in our summer travel season, where Shaquille and I are in different places. Jason, I was just glad to lend my positive brand to help a guy like Shaquille O'Neal raise his prestige a
little bit. How generous of you. I mean, what would he have done otherwise?
Seriously, I mean, I was worried that he was going to end up on welfare or something.
Yeah.
And so I figured, can I give a guy a helping hand to help Shaq get a little more exposure?
Yeah.
In all honesty, he was looking to do a podcast. He had interviewed a bunch of people about doing a podcast, and he didn't tell them what he wanted to do. He interviewed them thinking he'll connect with somebody. He wasn't connecting with anybody. So we finally got the call that, hey, John, are you interested in having dinner with Shaq? He'd like to talk to you about a business proposal. So I said, yes. And so I told my wife what the proposal was about. And she said, do you think you're going to work with Shaq? And I said, hell no. He's never going to pick me. I said, but I'm going to be able to tell my grandchildren that I went to dinner with Shaq.
Right.
You know, so I'm going. Went to the dinner, and I swear to you, within a half hour, 40 minutes, we had sat across the table, and he said, I want to work with you. And I was so excited. I mean, it was like, okay, because I said to him, if you want to do an NBA podcast, I'm probably not your guy. I said, I could do it, but I wouldn't do it justice. And then, and he goes, who says I want to do an NBA podcast? And I said, I'd rather talk to you about current events, and I'd rather goof off with you, and I'd rather showcase your humor. And do, and he goes, that's exactly what I want to do. And I've been waiting to hear that. And that's how it started. That's how it started. And now I got to say, though, our producer, Rob Jenners, who's part of the show, he is the brains in the operation. He's the guy who brings it together. He's brilliant. He's funny. He comes up with creative ways to pit us against each other. We can be debating current events. We get into a heated discussion this week on Monday's podcast regarding Colin Kaepernick. And that'll come out on Monday, the 14th of August. Mm-hmm. And it will go in a much different direction than people expect. I just want to tease it. A much different direction than people will expect. We can get heated, and then we're laughing, and we're joking around, and we're goofing. And one of the things that it's so much fun with a guy named like Shaq is that he really does allow my radio mind to sort of take over. As he says, I'm the white boy point guard. I'm John Stockton. He's Malone. And so, you know, and he, and we both listen to Rob Jenners implicitly on what's going to sound good. Should we do this? What should we do? Shaq has a spectacular Rolodex. I got to conduct the only interview that Shaq and Kobe have done together since he left the Lakers.
I know. That was huge.
It was a thrill for me to get to do something like that. But then we're interviewing Jimmy Fallon the next week, or we're interviewing Jimmy Kimmel, or we're having on Chris Pratt, or, you know, celebrities, a Snoop Dogg. And Shaq just has the best Rolodex ever. And it's so much fun to be able to do that, to bring on like the biggest names want to hang out with Shaq. Everybody wants to hang out with Shaq.
It's contagious listening, man. He's got a fun personality. It's big. He's comfortable talking about it. I mean, hell, you guys are doing the Chuck chicken wings in Charles Barkley's mouth.
Yes.
I mean, this this is stuff that nobody does. It's cool.
It's stupid. And the big thing is, too, is that it's weird is that we got pushback in the beginning saying, you know, you guys sound more like a crazy morning show than you do a sports podcast. And Shaq goes, that's exactly what I want. And it's like at that point, he just pushed back and said, that's exactly what I want. I don't want us to sound like a sports podcast. We're not debating sports. Sure, we touch on sports and we get listed under sports, but we're entertainment. It's comedy. I actually think we should be more under comedy, because we laugh so much and we do so many stupid games, whether we're arguing, did the crime happen at a Waffle House or a Walmart? You know, we play that game. We play stupid games, and we take people behind the scenes too in Shaq's life, because there are things that Shaquille O'Neal does that nobody believes. People do not believe that Shaq shops for his own groceries. He does every single week. They don't believe that Shaq goes to the local Walmart and shops. That's who this man is. He's really a regular guy in so many ways, even though he's just larger than life. And then we have fun with all the, you know, just all the different stories. And sometimes I geek out, like Phil Jackson on the show, totally like getting to pick the brain of the Zen master. I like sometimes geeks me out a little bit, because it's just so much fun, because when they're on with Shaq, they're relaxed. If they were coming on a sports talk radio show,
totally different.
They got their guards up.
Right.
They got their guards up much more. When they're on with Shaq, they're laughing, having fun, and we have a great time with it. So it's always a lot of fun.
So with all that fun, the one thing I want to make sure I give you some credit on is a serious aspect of your craft, and that's your work ethic. I mean, all these things we're talking about, to the guy listening right now, John Kincaid is on the air 5 days a week on 680. He's doing a podcast every week with Shaq. He's got a weekend shift on CBS Sports Radio. You do fill-ins when needed. That doesn't include client meetings, speaking engagements,
sure,
public appearances. And yet, you're an established guy. You don't need to do all this stuff, but you continue to do it. For young guys who are coming up in our business, or even for some guys who are established and content with the five-day-a-week, weekend-off kind of deal, why do you think it's important to be so busy?
First of all, I've heard that from people before. Well, once you get established, you don't need to do that anymore. I can tell you, financially, I don't need to get up at 4:30 in the morning to do a national radio show from 6 to 10 Eastern time on CBS Sports Radio. I don't need to do that anymore at this point in my career. I love doing it. And guess what? It's great for my personal brand. It's great for my brand acknowledgement. Because you know what? There may come a day where something happens and I'm looking for work. And I'll be known in 300 markets.
Right.
And I'll be known. And more importantly, too, you better be involved with your clients. The one thing I totally pride myself on is I have the longest running in Atlanta radio since Neil Bortz stepped away. Advertiser relationships in town. I keep my clients happy. I keep clients on the air for years and years and years and try to keep that relationship fresh and try to make sure that they know my name as far as they can call me on my cell phone. I tell any client that I do live reads for on my show, if they get me copy by 10 in the morning on the day of, that will be on my show, the live read. I'll update their live read and it'll be on that day when I do my live read. I try to make my clients feel like part of my family, like I'm connected to them, because you better have the hustle. And I think it's because of the fact that I came out of the business world is that I know what it's like to have been a commissioned salesperson. I know what it's like to beat the door and get told no, no, no. And I've got to say, the more young people that I meet coming up in this business, the more I feel a sense of entitlement that a couple years into their careers out of college, 24 years old, 25 years old, they're wondering why they're not in the daily lineup. They're wondering why they're not producing afternoon drive. They wonder why they're not getting their opportunity to host on the weekends. And they've barely scraped their knees in the business. And I'm like, are you doing extra? And I'll say to a kid who wants to be, who's a producer, I'll say, have you learned to run the board yet?
Mm-hmm.
Have you gone in and watched a shift and asked the board op to like show you how to run the board where you can sort of shadow them? So when they need somebody at the holidays to run the board and do it, the more you can do, you better be doing it. And guess what? I'm 52. You better be doing it when you're young and you're hungry and you get the energy for it. Because I'm telling you, there are nights where I hit the couch and go, man, I'm tired. Or I'll look ahead to the week and I'll tell my wife, man, this is going to be a killer week. I got a really bad schedule this week. The on-air work, the 3 hours a day, there's a lot more that goes into it than that. And if you're thinking that the salesperson's job is to go and get you clients and to get you endorsement fees and things like that, you better be cultivating that relationship. You better be tilling that soil. You better be watering it. You better be weeding it. And the more you keep clients happy, your bosses, believe me, the bottom line of your radio station, it's mission critical that you are a supreme gardener, that you are somebody who keeps the crops fresh and you're harvesting all the time. And they better be able to be picking money off the money tree that is your radio show. And if it isn't, you will fail. If it isn't, you will get replaced at some point.
Excellent advice for those out there who are doing shows. Listen to this man. He knows a thing or two about sticking around for a while. I want to wrap up with something I call quick hits. These are four questions.
Love it.
Just the first thought that jumps to your mind on each of these, okay?
Got it.
The best Atlanta sports radio personality, not named John Kincaid, would be?
Wow, there's so many good ones. I am going to give that honor to Chuck Oliver. Chuck Oliver does a regional show every day that goes around to southern markets, like 40 southern markets, and then he does Chuck and Chernoff, which is a highly successful Atlanta radio show. Chuck is a guy who also stepped out of being a school teacher. His passion for college football, his passion for life in the South, he relates to listeners in a very odd fashion because Chuck is not your normal guy, and he embraces his oddness. He loves it. He is entertaining to listen to. I'd give the edge to Chuck, and it's very, very tight because we got a lot of great people in the market.
The reason the Two Live Stews are not back on the air full-time in Atlanta is?
They took their eye off the ball and believed their own hype. I was walking into ESPN and doing my own radio show with my name on it at the network level, and they were doing First Take and some other things like that, and their star was rising high. You can't lose the hustle. You can't believe you've arrived after a few years in the business. And better yet, more importantly, you've got to reinvent. You better have a second pitch. The Two Live Stews for a while had a magnificent first pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny, and it was different, and it was creative. They never developed the second pitch. They never had a second pitch. They never had a third pitch. And that gets old. You got to be able to surprise the audience. And I think they stopped surprising the audience. They're two talented guys. They're really nice guys. And I wish they were still around because I think that they did have a vibe going. I just think they took the eye off the ball.
More important to John Kincaid, an Eagles or Falcons Super Bowl victory?
Are you kidding me? Please stop.
Come on. You got to go with personal or professional. What's better?
It's the Eagles. It's 100 times out of 100. And I think my listeners know when the Eagles do win a Super Bowl, I will be a mess. It will be the happiest moment in my life, I say, next to my daughter's birth and my marriage, of course. They're the only team that I allow myself to be sort of stupid for, that I allow myself to be a real fan for. Love the Phillies. I've seen them win twice. I'd better sure as hell see the Eagles win a Super Bowl before I die. Because I'll tell you, if not, I'm coming back and haunting somebody.
And finally.
It's Eagles.
Finally, one area of sports radio hosting that's largely ignored and underappreciated.
Preparation. And it's such a vague term, and it means different things to different people. But I can tune into a show and listen to a host, and I'm shocked at how many hosts throw out the phone number before they've thrown out opinion. I'm shocked at how many hosts tease something. They don't tease opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The opinion is what they can't get elsewhere. They can get scores. They can get stats. They can go to an app. They can go to their smartphone and get any of that. What they can't get is your opinion. Make your opinion the destination. So the preparation is I sit with my iPad every night and the notes feature is open. And as I'm watching games or I'm thinking about the show, every single thing I write down is an independent thought and it's an opinion, nothing else. Because my show better be a large collection of opinions, some that will incite, some that will engage, but whatever they are, they're opinions. Don't give me your diatribe or your facts or your thesis paper on something. Give me opinions, make it entertaining. And by the way, if you do a 12-minute radio segment, you better be doing minimum of two topics, if not three.
I got to tell you, every time we chat, man, I learn something. I love talking about the business with you. I want to congratulate you on 17 years upcoming with 680 The Fan. Hell of a run with Buck there. The fact that you guys are doing 4,000 shows together is incredible.
Oh, my gosh.
All of your success.
How has he tolerated me?
Yeah, exactly. Look, I can go about an hour and 10 minutes with you. He's got to do 3 hours every day.
It's the way. Jason, thank you so much. I love it, and I'm so excited with the BSM, and I follow it, too. I retweet a lot of the stuff. I love listening to my peers, too. I love listening to the conversations you're having with my peers because, again, I can always steal something from somebody else. You give me a popular person in our industry and I hear something, I'll steal it. I'm not above it.
Hey, it's never a bad thing to be a burglar, right?
You got it, buddy.
Hey, it was great catching up. I appreciate the time.
Anytime, Jason.
This is the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
That was John Kincaid of 680 The Fan and CBS Sports Radio. You know, there were so many things in there that I don't even know where to start. I thought his candor on the peaks and valleys of a 17-year partnership with Buck Ballew was really informative because it shows you how sacrifice, understanding, and acknowledging when you're at fault all come into play when you're trying to make a show work. I also thought John's assessment on the competitive landscape in Atlanta and Philadelphia was right on point. The rivalry that existed in Atlanta about 10 to 15 years ago between 790 The Zone and 680 The Fan was very intense. And although there's passion to win at both 680 and 92.9 The Game, it's not as heated and personal as that previous battle was. Now, the same can't be said in Philadelphia, where WIP and 97.5 The Fanatic are jockeying for position as the market's top sports radio brand. Look, Philadelphia is a city that's not going to embrace network shows. And when I arrived there in 2006, the station had three national programs on it. We knew we couldn't win that way, especially when you're going up against a formidable lineup like WIP had at the time, which included Angelo Cataldi, Mike Missinelli, and Anthony Gargano in middays, and Howard Eskin in afternoon. To see the way the competition, though, has changed over the years, it's been a lot of fun to watch from afar. And as John said, the real winners are the audience because they now have two excellent options to listen to. But that's going to bring us to the conclusion of this episode. My thanks again to John Kincaid as well as to each and every one of you for listening. If you're overseeing a brand and feel it could benefit from an outside-the-building analysis, I do work as a sports radio consultant and strategist. To find out how I can make a difference for your company or brand,
visit the website, sportsradiopd.com, where my services and contact information are readily available. In the words of Kid Rock, if it sounds good, you'll hear it. If it looks good, you'll see it. If it's marketed right, you'll buy it. But if it's real, you'll feel it. So be authentic in everything you do. Until next time, I'm Jason Barrett. Thanks for stopping by.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.